I want you to think about the deals that you've been working on lately, and I want you to be completely honest with yourself. Do you find yourself in these situations where people are continually asking you to lower your price, or perhaps they're looking to negotiate the terms of the sale? If you find yourself in those scenarios, this episode of the Sales Playbook Podcast is going to be especially for you, because we're going to be talking about things you can do to avoid having to negotiate. My name is Paul Castain from YourSalesPlaybook.com, and I'm the author of the Your Sales Playbook blog and your host for the Sales Playbook Podcast. I've personally trained over 15,000 sales reps, sales leaders, and business owners to sell more. So get your playbooks ready, because school is now in session. So before we begin, I have a really cool freebie for you guys. I know this time of year, a lot of us were thinking about our goals for the next year. I mean, here it is. It's like, I can't believe it. It's almost November already. I mean, it feels funny even saying that, but here we are. It's almost year end, and we're going to blank. We're going to get through the holidays. It's going to be a brand new year. So a lot of us were thinking about the goals for the next year. We're thinking about our plan on how to get there. And I know a lot of you guys are thinking about, well, should I hire a sales coach? How do I even go about it? There's like a ton of choices out there. How do I go about it? So I've put together a resource page with a few cool things on it. And one of the things is a free audio sales lesson. And I call it What Every Sales Rep Should Know About Hiring a Sales Coach. The second thing that I've put together for you is a free download. And it's a free downloadable guide on how to hire a sales coach. I put questions in there you should be asking, what you should be looking for, just to make your decision a little bit easier and to help you make the best decision. And then finally, I have a free checklist where you can rate yourself on the qualities of sales rock stars. And what I'm hoping that this will do, it'll help you flag areas where you need to improve upon. So if you'd like to snatch like your free copy of these things and take full advantage of these freebies, I want you to visit yoursalesplaybook.com/coaching. yoursalesplaybook.com/coaching. And obviously, if you have any questions, or if I can help you in any way with this whole coaching thing and put together your plan for 2018, I want you to email me directly, paul@yoursalesplaybook.com. paul@yoursalesplaybook.com. So, having said that, I say we get right down to business. So, a lot of the time in sales, we treat symptoms instead of the actual problem. So let me give you an example of this, away from negotiation for a minute. Many times we're taught in sales, when it comes to objections, we're taught how to respond to them instead of how you got there in the first place. And it's the same thing with negotiation. So what I thought I'd do is give you, I don't know, like 5 or 6 ideas just to help you to avoid being there in the first place. Now, when I say avoid negotiation, I don't mean somebody says to you, hey, you know, let's talk about these prices. And you say, yeah, we'll get to it later. And you just kind of sweep it under the carpet, and then you conveniently forget about that whole request. I'm talking about things you can do on the front end of your deals, like almost from the word hello, to just make them less resistant to, first of all, objections in general, but certainly just like, you know, like more resistant to like people asking you to negotiate terms or pricing or anything else. So the very first thing that I want to throw at you, you're going to want to say duh. But if you're like me, you're going to say duh. But then when you have a moment to step back, you go, hey, wait a minute. You know, this makes a lot of sense. So get ready. I'm putting on my Captain Obvious cape for item number one. You really need to have a full pipeline. And yeah, I know, duh. And yeah, on the surface, it's like really shitty advice that I'm giving. It's like, yeah, don't forget to breathe today. Of course you should have a full pipeline. But I don't know about you, but I just think that you're going to make a better deal when you have lots of other things that are going on. And I also believe that you're going to kind of reek of a quiet confidence. That's very, very important. So a lot of people in sales, they agree with this idea. Yeah, I need a better pipeline. I need to have more deals working. But then when I ask the question, so tell me, what are you doing to make sure that not only are you servicing your existing clients, not only are you working your existing deals, but like, how are you like continually putting more deals on that conveyor belt? Like, how are you keeping yourself from just like having what you have like working on right now? So a very simple thing that you can do is make sure that your prospecting is on the calendar. Again, really simple advice, but a lot of people blow it off. Make sure that it's on the calendar. Don't just say, well, yeah, I've got to like do more prospecting. No, like specifics. Like, well, Tuesday of this week, from this time to this time, I'm hitting the phones. I'm going to be sending out emails or whatever. Thursday, from this time to that time, I'm going to be working on prospecting again, or I'm going to be going to some networking events after hours. Get it on the calendar and respect it once it's on the calendar. And what I mean by that, the respect part is so important. Many times in sales, we will set appointments with clients or prospects, both. And what happens is, you know, you wouldn't dare just like blow off that appointment, right? Just for the hell of it. You know, something else came out. I'm going to blow off that appointment. It would be disrespectful. But my point is this. Why is it that everybody else gets the respect? But when we make an appointment with ourselves to make like these prospecting calls and these, you know, like some kind of prospecting activity, we let anything else come up. Just like take it off the calendar. That's to me how you stay in response mode. We want to get you in proactive mode. So doing something like that. Also too, I always talk about my 2-2-2 formula. The 2-2-2 formula is designed to help you like every single day create opportunities. So it's very, very simple. Every single morning, when you're having that coffee before the day officially begins, what I want you to do is send out two emails to two people who aren't doing business with you yet. Now, I want you to think about that activity. If you're doing this every single day, sending out two emails to two people you aren't doing business with, you're going to do that very, very quickly. And really what you should be doing is developing templates that you're using. So that activity is going to take you, I mean, what, like 3 minutes to do? So boom, right before the day even starts, you've got two like attempts out there of communicating with the potential client, right? Right while you're having the morning coffee. The second thing that I want you to do every single morning, again, right after you do those emails or before them, however you want to do them, but before the day officially begins, send out two pieces of snail mail to two different people, two people that you're not doing business with. And I want to be very clear. When I ask people, hey, you sending out snail mail? They say, yeah, I send thank you cards. That's a form of snail mail. And bravo, gold star, if you're remembering to send out thank you cards, you should be sending them. But I'm talking about like sending these out as just a form of outreach to potential clients. Nobody does it. It's really not a noisy channel, believe it or not, especially when we're talking about putting a little handwritten note in there, a little post-it note. You could take a marketing piece from your company, slap a post-it note on it with a quick little note, handwritten, of course. That activity, by the time you do it, I don't think it's going to take you more than 10 minutes, especially if you're making it a daily habit. Whatever you do daily and consistently, you get better at it and quicker at it and more efficient when you're doing it. So I want you to think about something. Inside of 15 minutes in the morning, you've already reached out to four people. And I guarantee you, most of your competitors, 99.9% of them, haven't done that. So you're starting the day just mentally in a better place. And then somewhere throughout the day, at a more godly hour, what I want you to do is pick up the phone and call two people that you're not doing business with. Yeah, a cold call, a warm call, whatever you want to call them, lukewarm, whatever. It doesn't matter. We're not going to get into the definition of a cold call. But think about this. If you're doing this every single day, that's six more that you can get out there working on your behalf. So this isn't the end all. This should be done as a complement to some more substantial types of prospecting activities, but it goes a long way and it really adds up, because if you really think about it, it's not just two that we're talking about. We're talking about six more attempts each and every day times 5 days. That's 30 more a week. Times 4 weeks in a month, 120 a month. And then we break it out on the yearly basis. You know, you're talking about, what, like 1,400, 1,500 more. Imagine if you'd been doing that. Like, you know, guys, I've been giving this advice forever. So what if last year when I gave this advice, you say, yeah, I'm on board, and you've been doing it for a year. You'd have 1,400 to 1,500 more than you have right now. And the way I look at having 1,400 to 1,500 more, you would really have to go out of your way to, like, take a picture of yourself, like mooning your prospect, or like giving them the finger, or like telling them the F off, that you know, pretending like you're doing sales activity for like something not to come from this. I mean, think about that. So that's the first thing that I want you to do. But remember, you want to develop a full pipeline. You want to be actively prospecting, because I really believe, and I want you to think about this, people can sense a confident person. Do you agree with that? Can you read somebody and see if they're confident or if they lack confidence? And then what I really want you to think about is that people can also sense a lack of confidence. I think people can smell blood. I think people can sniff out when you're desperate. And the story that I always like to tell, in fact, I just told it on my blog this week, is the story of when I was a vice president for a huge billion-dollar-a-year printing company. And there, we were developing this program, and we called it the Sales DNA program, where we can hire people, not necessarily from our industry, but had the DNA, the right stuff, to be a successful, you know, rock star sales rep. So one of the things that I developed for the company was a way for us to look at our top performers and just see what was the right stuff. What were the qualities that these top 25 sales reps had in common? And in order to do that, I needed to get a partnership with an assessment company so that we can test our best sales reps and then modify an instrument to be able to assess others against these best practices. So I went to this one company, and I had experience with them from when I worked with Dale Carnegie. And so what they'll never realize is how much I really wanted them to be the partner. You know, I had history with them. I loved what they did. They had just a great reputation. They knew what they were doing. But this sales rep was desperate. And I don't want to seem like a grade A prick here, but I'm also a business person. And my job at that point was also to get the best possible deal for my company. Now, he came in at a price that was about $250 per assessment. Now, I negotiated that price down. In fact, I'm not going to tell you what I negotiated it down to. Let me tell you what he did that made me very, very confident that I could bring his price down substantially. First of all, he just had this way about him that spelled desperate. He just did not have the confidence. He was very, very desperate. He was going over the top with kissing my ass throughout this whole thing when I wasn't even asking him to. I mean, again, had he stopped and paid attention to the signals and the little things that I was throwing out there, he would realize that I love their product. I had a history with their product. I even told him that in the initial meeting, but he wasn't paying attention to those things. He was really focused on having to make this deal. I don't know what kind of pressure this guy was under, but at the end of every single month, he would have some new deal for me and like to close me. And every deal, every month was better than the one before. So he was conditioning me to hold out for the better deal. right? Think about that. I mean, if every month you're giving a deal to somebody, you're saying, look, if you do this by the end of this month, I'm going to throw in this, I'm going to reduce that. Then, you know, you're basically conditioning somebody, well, hold out. If it's going to get better and better every month, let's just hold out. I mean, I had time on my side. I didn't have to do it right that second. He was obviously very, very desperate. So anyway, long story short, because of how he carried himself and the lack of confidence and also just always trying to close me repeatedly, just like blowing up my phone all the time, he was just really coming across as just overly eager, not in a good way, not at all in a good way, in a desperate type of way. What happened was I negotiated it down from $250 to about $25 a piece. That's a substantial difference. Now, it was still a really good deal for the sales rep. I don't want you to think, well, Castain is really sleazy. I mean, I had 850 sales reps, so it was still going to be a really good deal for this guy. But I wanted this particular product. I was dead set just on, I want this product. And he never really took the time to see that. His questions that he asked me all along, they sucked. If he asked better questions, he would have seen that I was like practically, you know, like almost like a groupie for this product. I mean, seriously, it was like an obsession I had with their product. So anyway, I want you to think about that. That's item number one. Item number two is getting right from the start the right people to the table. Now, I want to be very clear again. I'm not talking about getting the right people to the table for a negotiation. I'm talking about like right from the beginning, when you're meeting with a prospect, get the right people in the room, get all the stakeholders in there. And let me define what I mean by right people. Many times in sales, we were taught that you get the highest level decision maker, right? I mean, that's a good theory, it's a good practice. Certainly, we need them to sign checks. We need them to make, you know, little like internal politics, things with internal politics, make them go away, get people on board, get them to cooperate with us. It's very, very important to have them. So let's have them. But the big mistake is that when people are at the 30,000 foot level, they really don't experience the pain points and in many cases the opportunity points of a product or service because they're far removed from it. No disrespect to the C-level. We need them as part of it. They are a stakeholder in this. But many times the real pain is felt in the trenches. So we want to make sure that we have those people on board. So either way, whether you agree with me or not, we need access to people that sometimes are going to be different than the actual contact we have. But what the thing that keeps us, like, makes us hold back in asking is that how do you ask someone who's your contact for access to other people without making them seem like they suck? Like they're like, you know, the, you know, like, I don't need to talk to you. You're just a lowly, you know, clerk or something. Like, how do we do this? So the average salesperson avoids that type of, you know, what they think could be a confrontation. But I have a real simple way that I ask. At the moment that I'm setting up an appointment with someone, what I do is I simply ask, who else besides yourself should join us? Right, and there's more to this, but let me say it again. Who else besides yourself should join us? Now, one thing I learned about people is that people don't walk around through life with a list of people that should be in meetings readily available. So we have to help them think of people. So what you want to do is suggest, I prefer 2 to 3 groups of people. I like threes, by the way. The brain loves threes. There's something about a rhythm about threes that the brain likes. The brain can easily access threes, remember and retain threes. So what I do is I give categories of people, because that's how the brain files things away. So in my context, right, I'm a sales trainer. What I'll do is I'll say, who else, like, and let's say I'm speaking with a vice president of sales. So I'm starting at a high level here. So what I might say is, you know what, Bob, and let's hope that the person's name's Bob, because if it's Mary, she's going to get real shitty with me. But anyway, I'm going to say, you know what, Bob, who else besides yourself should join us? Perhaps some of your regional sales managers, certainly some of your sales reps. Hey, how about, you know, you mentioned to me that you report to the chief revenue officer. Should they join us as well? I give them suggestions, but I never stop asking for access, because one thing I know is many times we haven't fully earned that right. We don't have the full trust of someone. So at the end of every single meeting, whether we're face-to-face or we're doing this on a conference call or if it's something even informal, what I will do at the end of every single meeting is ask them, who else should join us for the next meeting? Or who else besides yourselves should join us? And again, I will give them categories of people to think about. You see, when you get the right people in the room, we're setting ourselves up for success, because the last thing we want to do is later on have somebody say, well, I've got to run this by my boss, or you know what, and kind of like that good cop, bad cop tactic in negotiation. Well, you know what, I'm on board, Paul, I love you, but the VP of sales, he has a lot of concerns. Well, I mean, right from the start, we want to get those people. Plus, it's very, very important that we hear from the stakeholders, because whether you realize it or not, they're going to be whispering in this person's ear. So I would rather have the chance to learn about what's on their mind and what's important to them in this deal and in working with me. I'd also like the benefit of knowing that exact moment when they might not be on board anymore. So having them in the meetings is instrumental. So that's when the next thing that I do. Item number three, establishing authority. Authority is very, very important. I don't mean it in a bad way. I don't mean it in a know-it-all type of way. But you want to establish authority with your prospect. Now, there's a lot of ways that you can do this. But one of the things that I really recommend that you do is that you continually educate the prospect on how to make the right decision. Because I maintain that everyone's on the fence. I mean, I wish we lived in a world that by the time I get to a potential client, they're sold. It's just, you know, we're just going to write you a check, Castane. If I lived in that world, boy, would I be like filthy rich. And you would be too, if you lived in that world. And our egos would be like, we would need another house to house the ego. But we don't live in that world. So what we want to do is continually educate them. See, when you're teaching people and you're doing it in a way that you're not a know-it-all and that you're condescending or anything like that, you are establishing authority with them. And that's important. So let me give you an example of how I establish authority. Now, aside from all the blogging and podcasting, see, that's, by the way, that right there is a testimonial to why I believe that content marketing is so important. Because if you're listening to this right now and you've been listening to this for a while, you know, hopefully I've bonded with you and you like my ideas. If you've been reading my blog or maybe things that I do over on LinkedIn or maybe in one of the groups that I manage on LinkedIn or over on Facebook, I've established some degree of authority with you. So that's one way that you can do it. The other thing that I do is that when I speak with someone, especially this time of year, I have a lot of conversations with people about their sales kickoff meetings. They're looking to get a speaker, somebody do some breakout sessions and some training with their team or whatever. Now, what I do is I just basically say to them, hey, listen, you know, I know you have a tough decision to make. And let's stop right there. Letting people understand that you understand them, I think, is very, very important. I think it removes the potential for us to be in an adversarial type of relationship. So what I do is I tell them, hey, listen, I understand that on the surface, it, like a lot of us must look the same to you. But here are some things that you should be asking, some questions you should be asking, some things that you should be looking for. I'll give them the exact questions to ask my competitors. So, and, you know, I'm giving this to you, Mr. Prospect or Miss Prospect, so that you can make the right decision. But doing that all along, giving them the questions to ask, giving them information, you know, here are three things that should be non-negotiable when it comes to hiring a keynote speaker. And when you do that, you're establishing your authority. You become the teacher instead of a sales rep. And I think it changes the dynamic. So that's one of the things that I would do. But also, too, I mentioned content. One of the things that I did was I created, and I mentioned it earlier today, I created a free download, How to Hire a Sales Coach. So now when people are looking into hiring a sales coach, and they stop by my site or I'm having a conversation with them, I can say to them, hey, listen, I know this isn't an easy decision for you. It shouldn't be an easy decision. I'm really happy that this is something you're putting a lot of thought into. I've created a guide to help you consider the right variables, to ask the right questions. I have it word for word what you should be asking a sales coach so that you can make the right decision. Let me get that over to you. Things like that and seeing my name on it establishes my authority. So that's one of the things you can do. Another thing that you can do is, and nobody does this, by the way, is including your bio in with your proposal. Now, why would you do that? Well, there's a lot of reasons. First of all, because nobody does it. They're busy selling the company. I maintain that people buy you, then they buy the company. And, you know, we're not going to go and just present one of those. We're going to present both. So if you have some degree of experience, now I'm not saying that you need to have 34 years of selling experience like I do in order to do this. Heck, if you've had 5 years of experience, I would be doing this. If you have, you know, maybe you have 5 years of what, you know, of related experience, not necessarily in your industry, I would do this. But I would put a bio in with your proposals, put your picture on it so that, again, they become very familiar with your face and the name and that association. But the beautiful thing about a bio is that it's another way of establishing your expertise. So, and by the way, that very well, in something with like all things like being equal, like they're looking at things, man, you're running neck and neck. Many times in sales, we'll say to people, well, you get me. Well, that's a cute thing to say to people, but how are you going to demonstrate that you really are the difference, that you could be their advocate, that you have the expertise and the know-how? So that's one of the things that I want you to think about, including that bio, some content, maybe develop something, what every buyer should know about this type of widget, so that you're establishing the authority, you are teaching them, you are influencing them, and it's all done in a very helpful, non-sleazy type of way. And that's why I like it. The next thing that you want to do, and this one, if you are driving the car, you need to pull over. For those of you not driving the car, you need to circle this next one. You need to put arrows saying, over here, dude, or dudette. You need to like put stars and stuff. If there is a way that you can animate this shit so that in the future it is jumping out. If you are like an inventor and you can invent something that makes us jump out of like the page and headbutt you and beat the shit out of you for you to like get attention to this thing, this is it right here. You ready? Ask better questions. Now, again, some of you might be inclined to say, duh. The problem with most sales reps is that they were taught that you ask kick-ass questions to get information. That is part of it. It is a very small percentage of it. The average sales rep is asking questions to get information, and they're missing out on other things. So let me tell you some of the benefits of kick-ass questions. Number one, there is no better way to develop rapport and credibility with people. Again, we talked before about establishing your expertise, right? And establishing authority. Do people judge us by the questions we ask? Do you think many of the people that buy your product or service have heard the same questions over and over again? Do you also think it's possible that a lot of your competitors ask more spec-related questions instead of questions that cut to the core of the problem or perhaps the opportunity? In fact, let's talk about that for a minute. That's another mistake that a lot of us make in sales. We're taught we have to find the pain. I think that is the biggest bullshit story to have ever been fed to sales reps. Now, I want to be clear on this. When it comes to making a change, people will do more to avoid pain and remove pain than they ever will to get something that's pleasurable or to embrace an opportunity. So, yes, it's in your best interest to find pain, but here's the big secret. You ready? I'm going to maybe I should whisper this so that nobody else hears this, because this is like really important. Am I being dramatic enough? Pain doesn't always exist. There's some sales trainers out there who say, oh, you didn't dig deep enough. I'm telling you, pain doesn't always exist. So if your questions are designed solely to find pain, this is why you're leaving with a whole lot of nothing sometimes. This is why people aren't moved off of that fence of indifference. And also, too, I'm here to tell you, this is also why some people are beating you up in a negotiation and peppering you with an objection or objections. Because you don't pepper somebody with one objection. You pepper them with multiple. So I just want to, because I'm not going to edit that out. I just wanted to clarify that. But anyway, I mean, so you want questions that are going to be shooting for things that are painful, but as well as opportunity. And I'm going to tell you how to do that in a second. But also, too, the other thing, like as far as benefits of questions, is that good questions emotionally charge people up. And one of those little cute sayings we say in sales all the time is that people buy emotionally and they justify logically, but nobody ever tells you what to do with that or how to do it. So by asking better questions, you can get somebody emotionally charged. And when you think about that, remember, we can get them either emotionally charged up about their circumstances not being where they want them to be in a bad way. They're very disappointed with the vendor that they have. They're very, very disappointed with their results or their profitability or their sales or whatever it is. But it can also be getting them excited about the future and opportunities and, you know, where things may not be painful right now, but we can make them better because we can always make something better. Good questions allow you to guide instead of telling somebody. Let's say that one again. Good questions allow you to guide instead of telling someone. Do you think that there might be a higher probability of objections and people wanting to negotiate if you're telling, as opposed to them arriving at that place on their own? So a good question can gently guide them by the hand to that realization instead of beating them over the head with it, which is what a lot of salespeople have done, right? And I certainly was guilty of this in like at least the first 10 to 12 years of my selling career. But also, great questions allow you to stay in control. The person asking the questions is generally the person in control of the dialogue. And that really, that's something that I want you to think about throughout the entire sales cycle. From the time you're on the phone with somebody, the person asking the questions is a person in control of that conversation. When you're meeting with people, the person asking those questions, in control. Between meetings, the person asking the question will generally be the person who's in control of it. So what I want you to do in terms of asking better questions, I'm just going to give you a little exercise to do. And it's one that I tell all my coaching clients to do once a quarter. And the reason why I want you to do this once a quarter is that it's very, very important that you have a current understanding of the people that you're serving. And business moves at the speed of light. So this is not something that you could do once a year and call it good, or once, you know, like every 2 years and call it good. Just in the time we've been on this podcast today, something's changed somewhere. And probably with one of your clients, just so you know. That's how quickly this whole business like landscape is moving right now. So what I want you to do is mentally fire yourself once a quarter. And don't worry, you can mentally rehire yourself with a raise later. But right now, you are effing fired, right? Like, I can make a big scene about this if you want. Kick you out of the building. You know, have, like, a guy rough you up in the parking lot. You know, throw your shit out after you. Don't come back. You suck. Whatever, right? Whole HR nightmare here we can make. But you're mentally fired right now. And what I want you to do is think like the people that you're trying to serve. And I want you to think about everything that would be painful in your role that you would have. The people that buy from you, like for me, VPs of sale, it's basically sales reps, sales leaders, business owners. And I want you to think about those types of shareholders, all of the shareholders. What's the pain that they generally have? So I'm going to give you some generic ones, but you have to get very specific with this in order for this exercise to be meaningful to you. Things like deadlines can be really troubling for people, give them a lot of anxiety, a lot of agita, as they would say. Things like quality, surprise costs, managing multiple vendors, things with service or having to deal with service people or having to deal with their inside sales rep that's been assigned to the account. Things like communication and people getting back to them. And I hate to say this, but sadly it's true. Even in dealing with sales reps, a lot of them don't trust us. A lot of them don't like us. A lot of them feel that we're shallow. And, you know, this isn't your fault. This is probably the result of people who have gone before you that have screwed them over. But this is what they're thinking about. So what else can we add to that list? And that's going to be up to you and to get specific with it. But remember, we can't stop at the pain. We've got to think about opportunities. If you were this person who buys your widget, what would be things that would impact you as far as opportunities? So again, just speaking just rather like generically, it could be things like more sales. Now, sometimes people say to me, well, that's pain. It's only pain if like your sales suck. But like I always use my business as an example. My business has had year over year growth since we started. And not just because like we started with nothing, but I mean, even when I've had years that most people look at and say, that was a great year, the next year we've doubled and tripled the revenue. So I've had year over year growth. Still, if you were to come along and show me a way to increase my sales even more, even though I'm not hurting, I would be all ears. I would take that conversation and take that meeting with you all day long. So more sales, happier employees, happier shareholders, happier customers, greater efficiencies, things like that. And I want you to think about those two areas, things that would be painful to you, maybe things that would scare you, keep you up at night, get under your skin, aggravate you, as well as opportunities and things that would excite you, even things that would make you look like a rock star to your team, to your boss, to your shareholders, to your clients. I want you to think about those things. And then what you do is you create questions around those topics instead of questions that are more transactional and spec related, which I'm going to guess a lot of you are probably doing right now. But the other thing that I want you to do when it comes to asking great questions is have the balls to ask the difficult questions. Have the balls to call out the proverbial elephant in the room. People are judging you long before the negotiation begins. In fact, let me put it another way. Said a different way, negotiations begin long before the actual negotiation begins. People are sizing you up. They're continually judging you. So again, if we approach this in a way where we've got a full pipeline, we're very, very confident, we're not coming across as desperate, we've got the balls to ask them the difficult questions, that definitely puts some confidence out there. Also, they see that we're an authority and that we have their best interest in mind and we're educating them on how to make the right decision. We're giving them the questions to ask competitors. We're giving them information. Hey, you know, this is what you need to know to make the right decision. I know on the surface, a lot of us look the same, but here's three things that should be non-negotiable for you. You talk to anyone else after me, you ask them these three questions, because not everybody's going to be able to answer yes, and you really should be doing business with only people who can answer yes to those three questions. That kind of thing, and having the confidence to do that. Asking kick-ass questions in general. People are going to judge you by the questions. And, you know, you could tell people all day long that you're smart. And you could tell them things to make them think that you're smart. But again, a lot of people drop the ball when it comes to questions. I really, when I'm buying something and somebody's asking me the questions nobody else is asking or nobody else had the balls to ask, man, do they score points with me. And again, it's all part of people sizing you up and knowing if they can take advantage of you later on. So I want you to really take those things seriously. But there's one more thing that I want you to think about. And I talk about this one a lot. I call it homework and accountability. What I do at the end of every interaction that I have with people during the sales cycle is that I start with me and I assign homework. Then I assign them homework. So the way this might sound is I might say, you know, Mary, I have my homework cut out for me. Based on some of the things we've talked about today, I need to do A, B, and C. And I put timelines on it. And I tell them, I promise you, I will get you these things by these days or these dates. Then what I do is I say, okay, Mary, fair is fair. You have some homework to do as well. One of the things we talked about is you were going to be talking with your team and answer the following questions. The other one is you're going to check availability for both your boss as well as some of the people who report to you so that we can get their perspective. And I'll throw another thing in there. And then I put timelines on it again. Now, this is very, very important that you do this for a lot of reasons. Almost like I gave you all kinds of reasons why you should be asking kick-ass questions. The reasons why you should be assigning homework is that, number one, it allows you to tighten the leash before a negotiation. The problem is, if people haven't been tightening the leash, they go into a negotiation and then they tug that leash or they jerk that leash, and people are going to react not in a good way. But if little by little we keep control and we tighten that leash little by little, I think it's going to go a long way to avoiding a negotiation. And if you still have to negotiate, people are going to look at you in a different light. They're going to know that you're confident. They know that you're knowledgeable. The other thing that it does, it allows momentum to be established and to keep moving forward. The worst thing in a deal is when it stalls out. So we want to keep the deal moving forward. So if I have you thinking about things you need to be doing and doing them, and I'm doing things and we're constantly reporting back to each other and holding each other accountable, well, things then are going to be much better for us, right? Also, it keeps them engaged in the process. Now, this next part, it's all part of homework and accountability, because I didn't get into the accountability part. Before, I said you have to have the balls to ask the questions other people aren't asking. I also think that you have to have the balls to respectfully call people out when they don't do what they said they were going to do. So this doesn't mean that you have to be nasty about it or that you're going to condition them to not want to commit to you in any type of way, but it could just be a friendly nudge. Hey, Mary, I know one of the things that we talked about is that I was going to get you some things by Tuesday. I actually got them to you by Monday. You had promised me that you were going to get me some things by Thursday. Here it is. It's the following Wednesday. I want to see, is there anything that I can do to help? But I can start very, very subtly like that. And then I could even get a little bit more direct if I need to. I mean, and when I talk about getting more direct, here's an example. One of the first deals that I was working on when I started Castaigne Training Systems, I noticed that they were asking me for lots of things, and I would do them. And then they would conveniently blow off the things that they were responsible for. And I didn't like that. And I started very subtly, did these gentle nudges and all kinds of little tactics that I did. And I was still getting blown off. So what I did was I said, we're really going to need to talk about this. And we had kind of a bit of a come to Jesus. And I said to them, listen, you know, just so you know, and I hope this isn't being abrupt or just confrontational, but I'm speaking from the heart here. I understand that you're judging me and that you're looking to see if I'm a suitable match for you. But please understand, I'm doing the exact same thing back. And when I have someone who commits to things and doesn't keep those commitments, they really are not, they're quickly becoming someone that's not a desirable client for me. So, you know, we're going to need to either correct this, and I want you to understand that I'm holding you accountable too. And if it's something that you're too busy or this isn't the time, then let's part as friends. But one of the things that's very, very important to the success of a training, a coaching relationship, is that I have to have confidence that you're going to do the things I tell you to do. Because otherwise, you're going to think I'm the shittiest trainer in the world because you're going to say it doesn't work. But meanwhile, you never tried this stuff. So we either need to figure this out or we need to part as friends at this point. But I'm not going to keep doing things and you hold me accountable and you guys get to slide. That's just not going to work. So I probably said that in a way to you guys that might be a little bit rougher than I said it to them. But after multiple attempts, I need to get that out there, because to me, this was going down the road of a no anyway, the minute they started disengaging. And my theory is I need to either get it to a yes very quickly or get it to a no quickly. But I'm not going to keep wasting resources on somebody who's not fully vested in the process. So again, I think when you have the guts to call people out respectfully, kind of like a gentle nudge or whatever it is, it also establishes like that collaborative type of courtship, because it lets them know, hey, this is going to be give and take. This is going to be me doing things I'm supposed to do. This is going to be things that you need to do. But we're doing this long before any kind of a negotiation comes up, because they're going to understand that you're not a pushover. And they're going to understand very gently before you have to go from zero to, you know, non-cooperative. They're going to understand that you have your limits too. So that's kind of it, folks. You know, there's a lot more to this. And I mean, there's a ton more to this, actually. And I'm actually going to be sharing the things that you can do on the front end. I'm going to give you a lot more specifics as far as the how to do these things on the front end. But then what do we do now when we do all these things on the front end and now they want to play ball? Now we have to negotiate. So we're going to talk then about how to negotiate more effectively. We're going to be doing all of this during our Negotiate Like a Pro webinar. It's all going to be taking place on Thursday, November 2nd at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Let me give you just a quick rundown and then I'll give you the link where you can go and check it out for yourself. We're going to talk about 7 ways to create deals where there's a lower probability of having to negotiate. We're going to talk about 5 negotiation tactics that will most probably be used against you, and, you know, the countermeasures for you to use to regain control. We're going to talk about how to understand and leverage behavioral styles. We'll talk about one subtle tactic. In fact, this tactic is a really cool tactic that was taught to me by somebody who negotiates deals. Anyway, you ready for this? Anywhere on the low end of about 10 to 20 million. And on the high end, about $200, $220 million deals. And this person does several of them a year. Very, very successful. And the best part of it is, you don't have to be doing deals $10 to $20 million. You could easily use this tactics on much smaller deals as well. We're going to talk about how to create a collaborative type of negotiation instead of an adversarial one. We'll talk about what to do when you hit an impasse, because sometimes you do everything in the playbook and you're trying, and you guys just can't come to terms. So I'll tell you what to do there. And then finally, there may come a point, folks, where we have to walk away. But how you walk away is so, so important. So we're going to talk about how to walk away without killing your chances of doing business in the future. So if you guys would like to learn more, I'd like for you to visit yoursalesplaybook.com/negotiate. yoursalesplaybook.com/negotiate. And with that, I'm Paul Castain from yoursalesplaybook.com. I am wishing you an incredible week ahead. Go get them. The Sales Playbook Podcast is a Castain Training Systems production. Visit us at www.yoursalesplaybook.com.